That was Leanne Rimes with 16 Tons. And I was trying to look for songs to talk about money. Because I am here with Martha Burke. And she was in the news this week a bit. Perhaps Mayor Barry was more. I did a spot on this, Martha, but I didn't quote you. I only get like one quote
And that goes to the mayor.
I know, in a news bit. So, but it was about pay equity. If you've probably heard, we did a call-in show on this on KUNM earlier this year, and I did a spot this week. But we are among possibly the only city with a local ordinance on trying to ensure gender parity and in pay. And Martha was instrumental in helping that happen, working with Councillor Diane Gibson, working with Mayor Richard J. Barry. And, of course, if you don't know Martha, she came to New Mexico in 2005, I think.
Yeah.
She was my first interview, I think, on KUNM and Women's Focus. But we talked about her book, Cult of Power, and that came out of the Augusta Golf Club controversy, which you might recall was a golf club that did not allow women members. And Martha worked very hard to make that change and show why that mattered, because as her book, Cult of Power, pointed out, the membership included some of the most powerful CEOs in this country. And we all know that when you play golf, you aren't just playing golf in business. You're making deals and making connections. So anyway, we are very lucky to have her living in New Mexico. And Martha, I wanted to start, let's just talk about this ordinance. What started the whole process? Why did you want to do this? And, you know, you're a little bit lefty, but you approached a Republican mayor to make this happen.
Thank you, Megan. It's good to be here. Actually, the Republican mayor approached me.
Oh, well, there you go.
But here's how it started. It actually goes back. I think we have to credit Bill Richardson for this. Because when Bill Richardson was governor, I was a senior advisor to him for women's issues, and we instituted the first in the nation state level pay equity initiative, whereby contractors, if they want a contract at that time with the state, they had to tell us how they're paying women and how they're paying men doing the same or comparable jobs. Now, that initiative was begun in about 2008. It takes a long time to get something like this going. And so by January of 2011, when the governor went out of office, we had not progressed to the point of either giving a carrot or a stick to contractors. We were still in the reporting stage. And as I understand it, it was done, I know, by executive order. The present governor has basically just not paid attention to it. It hasn't been swept off the books, nor has it been vigorously pursued.
That is one of the problems with executive orders, right? At the federal level and at the state.
Yeah, one of the problems with executive orders, though, is that they can be overturned. And to this governor's credit, I will say she has not done that. But in any case, Mayor Barry knew about the initiative. I happened to be seated next to him at a dinner party. And we started to talk about it. Nothing happened for a few months. Mayors are very busy. I'm very busy. But eventually, I did get a call from a mutual friend and colleague who said the mayor would like to talk to you about instituting this at the city level. So that's what we've done. We are the first in the nation, as you pointed out in the intro. And we have made our initiative at the city level slightly different than that at the state, but the state initiative was very definitely the model for it. This mayor is quite progressive on this issue. I often point out that he and I do not agree on every issue, but certainly this is one where we do agree. And I am certainly indebted both to the mayor and City Councilwoman Diane Gibson for taking the leadership on this in the City Council, because it was actually done by city ordinance.
And so talk about what the ordinance actually does.
What the ordinance does is establish a process by which those seeking city contracts must report on their relative pay for women and men in 9 work categories. The same categories that are used by the U.S. Department of Labor in, for example, equal opportunity reporting. So they have to tell us how they're paying women and how they're paying men in a number of job categories, let's say managerial or skilled labor and so forth. And the data are put in what I just call a meat grinder, but it's an algorithm to actually calculate the wage gaps between women and men in the same job categories. And then those contractors who are doing well, meaning they have smaller pay gaps, can get a 5% premium on the bid if their pay gaps fall under 10% or under. In their job categories. It is a process that's still in flux because, as they say, when you're a pioneer, you get an arrow in the back and the settlers come in and take the land. So we're getting a few arrows in the back in terms of something this new and this groundbreaking is always going to have a few bumps in the road. We are working those out as we speak, really. We are hearing from different businesses, we're hearing from the public, advocates, and we're taking all that into consideration. But as things are now, it's a groundbreaking initiative. We're very proud of it. The mayor is behind it. The council passed it unanimously, which I think is significant. And we are serving as a model for other cities. I'm getting calls from all over the country. I am meeting with the New York City Council right after Thanksgiving, helping them to craft a similar ordinance, and talking to other cities like Phoenix, Buffalo, San Francisco, and just getting calls from around the country because of what Albuquerque is doing.
And so right now it's a 5%. Sort of premium when you're going for a bid. And for people who aren't used to like the bidding process or with government, is that a big deal?
It can be a big deal. It can make the difference in getting a contract and not. Everything depends, of course, on the competition, how well they're doing. There are other kinds of preferences in the system. For example, there's a veteran's preference. If you're a veteran-owned business, there is a small business premium, there is a local business premium. So all of those things, including pay equity, fall into the mix. But we just had our first award in the last couple of months that was due to this 5% premium on pay equity. So it can make a difference.
So we had they had a press conference this week to announce there were 19 companies
yes.
that reached this point where they can prove they have a discrepancy of 10%. Or less.
That's right. The particular contractor that was singled out for recognition, well, they all were, mm-hmm. But there was one that the premium definitely made the difference in getting the contract or not.
Hmm. And so the question, of course, people bring up is like, well, why don't they have to prove that there's no gap?
Well, that's exactly right. And it's a legitimate question. I have been asked, well, isn't that just saying it? 10% pay gap is acceptable? The answer is no, of course not. There is no acceptable pay gap when other things are equal. However, again, we are pioneers. We have to start somewhere. If you look at the initial data, we have seen pay gaps as high as 40% in some of these companies and some of these job categories. Well, if you make it a zero tolerance thing, most companies that are far away from that are not even going to try. And again, I want to emphasize, this is an incentive system. It's not a punishment system. So do we hope to get closer to zero as companies learn more about their own practices? For one thing, a lot of them weren't even aware before we started the reporting requirement of how big their pay gaps were.
That's interesting.
Well, it is interesting because we had one company, for example, they employ 50 people. The owner is the owner and sort of the big boss, but there are two managers in the company that do all the hiring and all the salary negotiations and so forth, and the owner just had not looked at it through a gender lens.
Oh.
So having this reporting is it's helping them. And by the way, Megan, it's keeping people out of the courthouse because pay discrimination has been against the law since 1963, and that's a federal law. So if a company is indeed discriminating as opposed to being clueless and wanting to fix something, they could be in trouble, and this could help them stay out of trouble.
And unfortunately, that's usually the mechanism you have to use to enforce it, right?
Unfortunately. Now, this city-level initiative is different in that it's an incentive, not a punishment. And the federal laws have been, unfortunately, weakened since the Roberts Court came into being because it's a very corporate court. And it has ruled in two landmark cases on pay discrimination that have made it much tougher to win in federal court, to the extent that many lawyers now will not even take this kind of case. Hmm. Now, we do have a law in New Mexico that helps. It's a New Mexico equal pay law, thanks to the Southwest Women's Law Center here and other advocates that was passed in 2013 that makes it a little bit easier to bring a cause of action in New Mexico.
Now, the mayor and Diane Gibson said at this press conference this week that they are planning some amendments next year that will lower that threshold. So you're to get that preference, presumably, you're going to have to prove now that your gap is less than 10%. They haven't set what that's going to be yet.
They have not set it. There may be other tweaks to the ordinance. It's still in the talking stage. The mayor did mention in the news conference, of course, that he would like to get to zero. Just to give you an example, though, of how hard it is to get to zero, one side or the other. For example, women now outnumber men in college enrollments. And they're doing better in college than men, depending on the major, but in a lot of areas. So we could see what, you know, a sort of a other side of the coin here. There are also other things that impact pay other than discrimination, obviously. How much education you have, how much experience you have, your managerial responsibilities in the unskilled area. Maybe you've been an apprentice and now you're whatever the next level is up, even though you're doing very similar work. So there are other things that legitimately impinge on pay. And to say we're going to get to absolute zero, I think it's fine to be a goal. Is it ever going to be a requirement of zero? I don't know. I'm not the decider, as they say, but I would advocate against that for the reasons I've just said.
And I'm curious if there was, when you guys rolled this out, what kind of pushback there was from the business community?
Not a lot.
Okay.
It was a surprise to us. Businesses are used to all kinds of reporting requirements. Some of them didn't like it. I had one guy call me and say, well, my wife and I are partners in this business, and she's not going to like this. And I just had to say, well, sir, I'm sorry to hear that, but it applies to you as well as your competitors. Some people with large pay gaps between women and men don't want to disclose that. Anything in a bid is public. Mm-hmm. So this will be and is public information. Some people don't like that. Now, I do want to emphasize, though, this is not anyone's salary on a bulletin board. This is a mathematical calculation of the pay gap between women and men in any given job category. It's nobody's name, nobody's actual pay. It doesn't even distinguish between gaps that favor women and those that favor men, because the city's position, as any government entity's position should be, is that discriminatory pay gaps are unacceptable, whether they favor women or whether they favor men.
Let's talk about the idea of the pay on the bulletin board, which doesn't apply here, but in the larger national context, Lilly Ledbetter helped get past one sort of foot of the stool of this, the Fair Pay Act, correct?
The Ledbetter Fair Pay Act.
But there's another part that they've tried to get past that would apply to, because she got fired for, I can't remember now, she because she actually talking about your pay and disclosing it to a coworker, right?
No. Okay. She did not get fired. What happened to Lily Ledbetter, and to use that stool analogy, mm-hmm. what she did was rescue a leg that had been sawed off by the Roberts Court, mm-hmm. and got it stuck back on. But what happened to her? Federal law says that if you are discriminated against at work, you have 6 months in which to file a complaint with the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, and there, from there, do a cause of action. In other words,
even
a lawsuit.
If you didn't find out.
Well, right. For 40 years, since 1963, the law had been interpreted consistently by the courts that you had 6 months from the day you found out you were being discriminated against. The Roberts Court, in the Ledbetter case, it was against Ledbetter v. Goodyear. She worked at a tire factory doing the same work as the men, had been there 15 years. And she found out after 15 years that she was being paid less than the guys, some of whom she had trained. And there was no question it was comparable work.
And she only found this out because someone sort of slipped her a note. I interviewed her years ago here, but I can't find the interview. Yeah. So
somebody slipped her a note, and she was devastated. And she brought a lawsuit. And what the court said is, oh, you're right. They discriminated, but you had to do it within 6 months of your very first short paycheck 15 years ago, even though she didn't know it for 15 years. So the Ledbetter Fair Pay Act was passed by Congress to clarify what the 1963 law said and how it has been interpreted. In other words, no, you have 6 months from the time you find out. But it did not advance pay equity law at all. It just got us back to where we were 40 years ago before her lawsuit. So.
Am I wrong? Were they not trying to pass an additional legislation?
Yes. Yeah. And you did mention that. And it's also called the Fair Pay Act.
Okay.
So,
I'm
sorry. It's called the Paycheck Fairness Act.
That's right.
So there's a lot of room for confusion. Right now, unless you're a federal contractor, thanks to a recent executive order by the president, but unless you're a federal contractor, you can actually fire an employee for discussing pay with another employee. And the Paycheck Fairness Act would make that illegal. Obama has made it illegal for federal contractors as well. So you can blab all you want to or try to get your coworkers to do the same thing. I don't think that it's much of a substitute for public disclosure, mm-hmm. because a lot of people, for good reasons, don't want to discuss their pay with other people. But when the data are out there, as we have in Albuquerque, it's much easier to see how you're being treated as compared to your coworkers.
When they pass laws that apply, you know, they can only do this, it applies to federal contractors in this case, if you want a contract with the city. What do you think the impact, if any, is on the private sector when those things happen?
Well, I think
applying for public contracts.
To the extent
contracts.
That private sector competes with people that are, most businesses, city contracting or state contracting is not their entire domain of business. It may be a part of it, but they have competitors in other parts. I think it'll be easier for these companies to hire good people when they see that their potential employer is more fair than possibly others who won't tell them. So I think it's going to have a positive effect. I think that eventually the pay gap is so stubborn that we may see laws that say, for example, if you want a corporate charter in a state, you may have to do this kind of disclosure. And I think that could be pretty significant. Or if you want a corporate tax break. The government does a lot of corporate welfare. And if some corporations were facing losing some of those welfare payments, they might be more willing to cough up some of the numbers.
If you're just joining me, this is Women's Focus. I'm Megan Kamrick. I'm filling in for Carol Boss today, and I'm talking with Martha Burke. We're talking about pay equity. This week, the mayor And Martha and Councillor Diane Gibson held a press conference to announce 19 companies have reached the threshold under this new ordinance where they have proven they pay 10% or less in terms of a pay gap between men and women so they can get a preference on city contracts. Well, you said the pay gap is stubborn. This I reported this on my newscast with Susan's Women's Focus show. PayScale Incorporated came out with a new study. And it was pretty shocking that they found it, women were paid less across all industries, all positions. And it was kind of depressing because I think the ones who got the most pay were married men, right, with families.
Yes,
the one with the
married
least
men
pay
with kids.
Were single women with kids.
Absolutely. That was the largest discrepancy, although there was a pretty big, to just tell the audience what PayScale is, it's a website that keeps up with what people make, and the way they do it is ask people. People log in and put their demographics, their company, what their responsibilities are, gender and salary. And they had a huge database, 1.4 million people.
So it's a valid survey tool?
Statisticians would say
it's not sufficiently
males.
Randomized.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're self-selected.
Okay.
Obviously. But, pardon me, it is the best benchmark we have right now because we've got all this secrecy. You know, if the company's not going to tell and the employees do, it is somewhat helpful. But there's a big pay gap between men with kids, married men with kids, and married women with kids. And I have a personal theory about that, which is, okay, so you've got two wage earners, you've got kids, the kid gets sick, somebody has to take off. Who is that? It's usually the lower earner. Who is that? Usually the woman. So it's a self-perpetuating thing in the sense that the employer might start thinking, oh, I better not give her a promotion. She's got these kids, she has to miss work. Maybe she's not as serious as the next person who might happen to be a guy, whereas men with kids are looked at as stable family men who are, and they self-reported. I thought this was pretty funny in this PayScale study. Many of these men reported that they very often prioritized children over work.
Mm-hmm.
I found that a little bit, That's a self-report, so
okay.
We don't know what prioritize means. Did they take off early to go to the kid's ball game, or did they stay home because the kid was throwing up? I think there's a big difference.
Well, and it also noted, which is something we've talked about here before, that women don't ask for raises as much as men. It's a phenomenon.
It is a phenomenon, and there's a reason for it. There's been some research on this topic, and women who push for more money, either in the initial interview or in a performance review, are seen as pushy bitches.
Uh-huh.
But men who ask for more money are assertive, and they are serious about their work. And that's a cultural thing that is probably the toughest nut to crack in this whole equation.
Well, Martha, I appreciate you coming and talking about this. Is there anything else you want to add about as we're talking about pay equity and cracking this nut?
Once again, I want to commend not only Governor Richardson for leading the way in this state, but Mayor Barry, Councillor Gibson, and the others who voted unanimously in favor of starting this very forward-looking initiative. Because the last thing I would say is if you don't have the persons at the top, you can't get it done. And so Albuquerque is leading the way, and thanks so much for letting us talk about it.